Do you want to be a star? Cayman's number one community station, Bobo 89.1 FM, can help. Bobo 89.1 FM is your voice. If you want a platform to create your own radio show, Bobo is the station for you. We provide the time, support, coaching, and the radio station to make yourself heard. Is it a talk show, music show, self-help, a show for kids, faith, advice, politics, or news? It's your show. It's your voice. Get in contact with Chuck Taylor at ctaylor@dmsbroadcasting.ky or call 745-3375 to schedule an appointment today. And let your voice be heard on Bobo 89.1 FM, Cayman's community station.
Looking for a unique gift? The National Gallery's gift shop has a wide variety of locally made jewelry and fine crafts, art prints, books, kids' items, and more. Express your creativity through our inspired selection of fine goods and one-of-a-kind pieces. Each purchase from the gift shop helps to support the National Gallery's public programs and free admission. The gift shop is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The National Gallery of the Cayman Islands is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and admission is always free. We are located on the Esterly-Tibbetts Highway just before the Kamana Bay Roundabout and can also be accessed via Harkvale Drive off Lawrence Boulevard. Visit our website at nationalgallery.org.ky or call us at 345-945-8111 to learn more.
As part of our art and wellness program, and in partnership with the Alex Panton Foundation's Youth Ambassadors Program, the National Gallery hosts free art drop-ins for teenagers aged 14 to 18. Join us on the final Saturday of each month from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Take part in collaborative art projects, socialize with peers, or enjoy mindful creative time in a safe space. For more information, contact us at program@nationalgallery.org.ky or call 345-945-8111. School and community youth groups receive free guided tours of the National Gallery. Our education team works with you to design curricular tours that supplement your classroom syllabus. Contact us at program@nationalgallery.org.ky or call us at 345-945-8111 to book your tour today. All the Coals We Left in the Fire, a mid-career solo exhibition of work by Nasaria Sakou Shalette, is on view at the National Gallery until October 7th. Shalette's work offers a deep and multi-layered consideration of Caymanian history, including those aspects of our shared experience that have often been overlooked or even buried. Admission to All the Coals We Left in the Fire is free, Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Donations appreciated. This exhibition is kindly sponsored by Butterfield. On today's show, we have two exciting interviews. First, Jessica sits down with Caymanian curator and PhD student Carrie-Anne Chisholm. Then, William Helfrich speaks with Davin Ebanks, winner of the Bendel Hides Award in 2021's Second Cayman Islands Biennial Reimagined Futures. Let's begin with Carrie-Anne and Jessica.
Today, I'm joined by Carrie-Anne Chisholm. Carrie-Anne is a researcher and curator currently pursuing her PhD in curating in practice at both the University of Reading and Zurich University of the Arts. She holds a BA in Fine Art from Oxford Brookes University and an MA in Museums, Galleries, and Contemporary Culture from the University of Westminster. She has held curatorial positions at the National Gallery of the Cayman Islands, Tate Exchange Program, and Oxford Futures Forum at the University of Oxford. And she was also a specialist lecturer at the Oxford Brookes University. Carrie, thank you for being with us here today on Artbeat. It's great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's so good to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to talk to you about your research and get into it a little bit more. Okay, so for those of us new to you and your work, can you tell us a bit about your background? So how did you get into curating?
Oh, how did I get into curating? So when I was, how far back should I go? I think the first time that I was introduced to the gallery, I was in high school. So a lot of the young people that are like 7 years old and in like year four and year three that are coming to the gallery for tours, like my heart is just so excited because I didn't actually explore the space until I was probably like 16, 17. And I was like, oh, this, I didn't know this space existed. So I did my work experience. And then after work experience, I applied for the Deutsche Bank National Gallery internship. So it was a year-long internship that I did before going off to university. And I remember one of the first exhibitions that that I worked on with Natalie at the time, so Natalie Urquhart, which is now our director and the chief curator. And she just introduced me to this whole new world of lighting and putting artworks on the wall and actually thinking about how visitors and the audience move into the space. And I was like, what is this magic? So then over that course of the year, like, I had conversations with her, got to find out a little bit more about what curatorial work is, what is the responsibility of a curator. And then I went off to university and I did my BA in fine arts. I wanted to understand the practical side of working with artworks to be able to be a curator and understanding, like, you know, that, like, magical genius when, like, an artist creates something and how difficult it is to release that into someone else's care. So, yeah, that's my journey. Yeah,
what a journey it is. Yeah, but I like that, you know, when you step into a space as just a museum visitor, you know, and you learn something or you see interesting things, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's, then you realize, wait a minute, like, this is somebody's job to put this all together. Like, how cool is that? You know, all of this has to come from somewhere, and usually a team of people, you mm-hmm. know, installing these exhibitions, coming up with the concept. So it's a pretty cool, you know, path to recognize that, wait a minute, this is something I can do, and this is a really exciting thing that I can pursue.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, yeah, what you were saying, going back to visitors coming into a space, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, sometimes you can take it for granted because it is that seamless, most of the time it is that seamless process of exhibitions are flipped or you see artwork on the wall, and there's this whole world that happens behind it, and so many people that are engaged in different aspects of an exhibition coming together and going onto the walls. So yeah, it's a whole, like, universe in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, at its most basic, an exhibition is just a display of works in mm-hmm. a public setting, you know. So whether that we would be at an art museum, you know, and it could be based on a certain theme or style of artworks, or it could be a solo exhibition mm-hmm. of one artist's work, or if we're talking about, say, a history museum, then we could be talking about more of an educational exhibition on a specific, you know, period in history or event. So exhibitions are kind of a broad-ranging concept, and you are interested in exhibitions as a tool for social activism. So can you elaborate on what that means?
Yes. So before I kind of touch on that point, I think that, you know, what you're saying is so important for audiences that don't fully understand exhibitions are and the different formats that they take, as well as curatorial work. And I think that, you know, as you were saying, that there's so many different ways that an exhibition or artworks can come together. So that could be, you know, as you were saying, like, within a museum context or outside of a museum context. So you have this, I think you have different ways that an exhibition is basically a tool. You know, it's a tool that you engage different types of artwork to say something, to do something, whether that is an educational role or it's bringing a community together or speaking about specific things. So I think that, yeah, when I think about exhibitions and really what, as a curator or as a cultural practitioner, what my interest is, it's looking at how to use exhibitions as an outreach tool. So thinking about ways that that exhibitions can be put together, so ways that people can interact with artwork, come into a space, whether that is an outdoor space or whether that's an indoor space, whether that's within an institution or not, and thinking about how their engagement with those artworks in this space can help them to acquire social capital. And then alongside acquiring social capital, thinking about how that can then be converted into different types of capital. So that's one way when I think about like outreach and engagement with audiences and communities. But then the other side is that social activism. And I think what's really beautiful about art, artworks, the production of artworks, the interaction of artworks, and then how that can be, how those can be brought together into a space, is that it has this really beautiful way of breaching really difficult topics. So thinking about hard subjects that we wouldn't really know how to begin to put the words together without offending people. You know, and it's not that that we're trying to find a space where everyone agrees, because that's not possible. But thinking about how can we start a conversation without anyone being on the defense, you know, so having a conversation where everyone kind of comes in, is like, oh, this is really interesting. What is this about? So when I think about exhibitions as a tool for activism, I think of it as a space where it can educate about different ways of understanding and knowing and being. And then also it being used as a safe zone. It's something that I've kind of recently started thinking about, but as a safe zone for people to step into, to express themselves, and for others to understand who they are. So kind of like an amnesty zone.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's important, an important point to raise too, because museums often play that role, or we strive to play that role, you know, where we are this neutral, safe space that we, you know, we present artifacts or objects on display, mm-hmm. and we do try and tell a story, but, you know, it's a place where we're trying to present information fairly and accurately and with sensitivity, mm-hmm. and, yeah, you know, I feel like there's a lot of fraught discussions that can be had in our current culture.
Absolutely.
And, you know, comment sections on online or social media. It's nice to have an exhibition as a space, like you said, that people can step into, mm-hmm. and I like that as an amnesty zone, how you said that. So the nature of exhibitions is that they're often temporary. Mm-hmm. So how do you think that a temporary show can have a lasting impact?
But yeah, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, is that temporality of exhibitions, and thinking about how do we create lasting impact beyond how temporary an exhibition is. You know, sometimes it's a couple of weeks, sometimes it's a couple of months, or might even go into a year. But, you know, how do you have kind of long lasting impact? And within that, there's kind of two things I've been thinking about. One is kind of a lot of what you do at the National Gallery is thinking about supporting programs, and how do you create programming that reaches the community beyond just looking at an exhibition or being within the exhibition space, but thinking about specific workshops or talks and lectures that actually bring a space or create a space for discussion. So, you know, there's that kind of shifting of education and mindset as a supporting part of an exhibition. But then you have the other side of it that I've been thinking about, is how do you disrupt spaces or disrupt thinking or disrupt, ways of being or ways of knowing within that small, that short time frame of an exhibition. So that's something that I've been kind of thinking about, is that experimental space within exhibition setups. Still working on that. Come back to me in a few months' time.
Will do. And I like that you touched on programming, because that is something that we try and do at the National Gallery, is activate our exhibitions through programming. And I think an interesting example of that was our recent poetry event that we had, that you were in attendance at. So that was for the current show that's on display right now, is All the Coals We Left in the Fire, which is a solo exhibition by Nasaria Sakhu-Shalet. And since Nasaria herself is an accomplished poet, we hosted this poetry open mic night. And we didn't know, we hadn't done an event like that before, so we weren't sure, you know, how many people were going to show up. We put out, I think, about 10 or 15 chairs, hoping that all the seats would get filled. But I think we had over 50 people in the end in the room. It was, this event was so well attended and so popular. And there was a really, like, there was a some kind of magic in that room that night. I don't know. There was no recipe for it. It was just this organic meeting of minds and hearts. And we had a list of selected poets who were, you know, scheduled to perform. But then we had also a lot of audience members who just in that moment felt moved to come and share, you know, and it was clear that this was a safe space for people to engage in some discussions about aspects of our current culture and identities that are maybe a bit challenging to talk about. But for whatever reason, that night in that room, it was this beautiful space of sharing and vulnerability. And you even got on the mic, Carrie-Anne, and shared a piece of your poetry as well. So I think that is kind of speaks to the power that exhibitions can have through their programming, you know. And I think it's just putting these things on, you know, build it and hope that they will come. And
yeah, I think that you know, touching on that very last thing that you said, build it and hope that they would come, that's something I've been thinking a lot about is, you know, how do you make sure that people come? And you can't as someone that puts together, organizes an exhibition or organizes a program or an event, you can't really ensure that people are going to come. It's just that, like, having that hope and creating that magical safe space. And I think that's something that night, that it felt like magic. There was something so beautiful about the people that were in the space and the space itself and how it was activated by the sharing of, you know, there were so many poems that really, you know, you could feel the heartbreak, you could feel the joy, you could feel the frustration, and it just created this beautiful space that people just felt so comfortable to be vulnerable. And I think that, you know, it, you know, as you're saying that, I did get on the mic, and it was the first time in over a decade, over 10 years, since I actually publicly shared any of my poetry or any of my writings. And I think that one of the things that kind of encouraged that space was the beforehand. And the beforehand for me was that most of the people in the room, so the majority of the people in the room, had visited the show. And the show itself, so the artworks that Nasaria has created for this exhibition, but also, you know, the works that she's included that she's created previously, as well as the curatorial interpretation, so the supporting text and the supporting words that went along with those work, that I think that's what created this shift in people. And there was like this, you know, everyone was just like, you know, being in this space and like this artwork inspired me, and Nasaria, your story inspires me. And that for me is why I want to continue being in this field. I can't imagine being anywhere else, because there is this magic that unites people. And not every exhibition will be for everyone. You can't be all things to all people. But I think that there are moments, and that's what I love about, you know, going back to this idea of exhibitions being temporary. So if you had a permanent exhibition, you would only kind of ever reach those people that really that exhibition speaks to. But this idea that exhibitions are up for a period of time and they change people's life and or their mindset, or they have this incredible experience for such a short period of time that they probably will never forget, and then the next exhibition comes and then it's a new set of people and it's a whole new topic and it's a new way of thinking and different programmings are activated around that. And I think that's where the magic happens, you know. It's creating a space and hoping that people will come, but also it being a safe space. So knowing that regardless of if you can understand how to read, you know, with air quotation marks, that, you know, understanding how to engage with contemporary abstract art and being like, nope, that's just too much for me. But it's okay, just come and be in the space. And, you know, the artworks themselves have their own energy, you know, so it's kind of that, whether that's, it's an electrifying, like, oh, you know, like this just energizes me, the colors and the movement, or this really calms me down and this brings me to a place I think is really important.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Carrie-Anne Chisholm after these messages.
Do you want to be a star? Cayman's number one community station, Bobo 89.1 FM, can help. Bobo 89.1 FM is your voice. If you want a platform to create your own radio show, Bobo is the station for you. We provide the time, support, coaching, and the radio station to make yourself heard. Is it a talk show, music show, self-help, a show for kids, faith, advice, politics, or news? It's your show. It's your voice. Get in contact with Chuck Taylor at ctaylor@dmsbroadcasting.ky or call 745-3375 to schedule an appointment today. And let your voice be heard on Bobo 89.1 FM, Cayman's community station.
Looking for a unique gift? The National Gallery's gift shop has a wide variety of locally made jewelry and fine crafts, art prints, books, kids' items, and more. Express your creativity through our inspired selection of fine goods and one-of-a-kind pieces. Each purchase from the gift shop helps to support the National Gallery's public programs and free admission. The gift shop is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The National Gallery of the Cayman Islands is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and admission is always free. We are located on the Esterly-Tibbetts Highway just before the Kamana Bay Roundabout and can also be accessed via Harkvale Drive off Lawrence Boulevard. Visit our website at nationalgallery.org.ky or call us at 345-945-8111 to learn more.
As part of our art and wellness program, and in partnership with the Alex Panton Foundation's Youth Ambassadors Program, the National Gallery hosts free art drop-ins for teenagers aged 14 to 18. Join us on the final Saturday of each month from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Take part in collaborative art projects, socialize with peers, or enjoy mindful creative time in a safe space. For more information, contact us at program@nationalgallery.org.ky or call 345-945-8111. School and community youth groups receive free guided tours of the National Gallery. Our education team works with you to design curricular tours that supplement your classroom syllabus. Contact us at program@nationalgallery.org.ky or call us at 345-945-8111 to book your tour today. All the Coals We Left in the Fire, a mid-career solo exhibition of work by Nasaria Sakou Shalet, is on view at the National Gallery until October 7th. Shalet's work offers a deep and multi-layered consideration of Caymanian history, including those aspects of our shared experience that have often been overlooked or even buried. Admission to All the Coals We Left in the Fire is free, Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Donations appreciated. This exhibition is kindly sponsored by Butterfield.
Welcome back to Artbeat from the National Gallery of the Cayman Islands. If you're just tuning in, I'm Jessica Ebanks, and I'm joined today by Carrie Ann Chisholm, a researcher and curator currently pursuing her PhD in curating in practice. So Carrie, as part of your research, you've recently traveled to Germany to attend Documenta, which is a major exhibition that takes place every 5 years. So can you tell us a little bit about your experiences?
Yes, it was incredible. So I think that there are multiple reasons it was incredible. One is the fact that after many years of not traveling, not going to like major exhibitions or like having really short trips and not being able to fully submerse myself in art, it was really nice to, I mean, I was gone for almost a month. So it was a really long chunk of time. It was very intense and a little bit exhausting, but a good exhausting. So Documenta 15, happens every 5 years, and this was the 15th edition of it, or iteration, and it was probably one of the most mind-changing events that I've been to. Not life-changing, but mind-changing. And I say that because the whole, so Documenta is basically like a biennale or a biennial. So it's this massive exhibition that kind of occupies multiple spaces in a city, and, you know, activates some really incredible artists, usually like really, really top well-known names, and it's curated by a single person that is kind of like a superstar, you know, to be selected for documentary or selected for biennial. But this year, the curators were actually a collective. So they were a collective from Indonesia called Ruang Rupa. And what's really, incredible about that was it's the first time that a group of people were invited to curate one exhibition. And one of the things that they wanted to do is to apply this theory of lumbum, which basically is this Indonesian concept of having a rice barn in a village, and everyone would bring their leftover rice to the rice barns so that everyone in the village has food. And their whole concept is that there's enough space at the table to invite everyone. So what they did as a collective was that they invited other collectives to exhibit. So there wasn't like single artists that were invited. And then those collectives invited other collectives. And it basically became this massive sharing space. And so it happened in Kassel, in Germany, and the whole city felt like a big community, like a big family reunion. And they had like pop-up cooking sessions together, and there were protests for various reasons, but it was this huge celebration of there was enough space. And now that the collective that curated the exhibition, now that I've kind of put myself or have been invited into this prime position that is coveted, I'm going to extend that to other people, you know. And that for me is just a beautiful thing of there are enough opportunities, there's enough space to invite people in. And it's that inclusion that I absolutely loved. It was magnetic.
Yeah, I like that idea. And it kind of speaks to this, you know, the abundance mindset, mm-hmm. you know, that it's like, I might not have enough on my own, but what I do have, I'm going to share. And then if we all share with each other, then we'll have enough,
absolutely.
You know? And so it's coming together and having that strength in numbers. That's really interesting. And I think, you know, you're based in Cayman, but you attend universities that are overseas. You know, you're affiliated with Zurich University of the Arts and with University of Reading in the UK. And as somebody working in the arts world, it's important to maintain these international connections, and go on these trips abroad to kind of keep abreast of what is happening mm-hmm. globally in the art world. But you're here in Cayman, and I know that contributing to the local community and supporting our local art scene is important to you. So how do you hope that your work impacts our community?
Mm-hmm. I think that you've definitely hit a massive nail on the head in terms of thinking about collaboration, international collaborations. So coming out of you know, this trip where I was at Documenta 15, but then also I went to the Biennale in Berlin, and I went to another exhibit. So to basically use my time to go to as many exhibitions and art spaces as I could. And from that, then the amount of connections and collaborative invitations I've received. So I was invited to speak with the students at Central St. Martin's in London for an event representing the Caribbean. So alongside Alice Yard and Blue Curry from the Bahamas. If you don't know these artists and these spaces, please look them up.
Yes, we will. We can link them in the notes to our show.
Yes. So being invited to an event representing the Caribbean and representing Cayman and talking about, you know, what's happening in our local art scene was so incredible. From, you know, just attending an exhibition, attending a space across the world, and then just being like, oh, well, actually, this is where I get to introduce people or expose people to, like, you know, the excitement of what's happening here. But not just, you know, those opportunities for myself that's important, but it's also bringing back some of that knowledge and information. So the amount of books that I purchased, and I had a whole suitcase of books. And I've been speaking to artists, and I was like, you know, I have the catalog for this exhibition. If you want to look at it, like, you know, I'm happy to share it with you and share it with other people. But then also connecting people with, you know, what's happening overseas to say, okay, well, this exhibition highlighted these things. How can we activate that here in our space? What are some things that are helpful or useful for us to implement here in our practices? And I think that's that for me is the most important, is how do we collaborate internationally and create opportunities for ourselves, and I'm saying ourselves as the creative community, you know, how do we create opportunities for ourselves overseas within the region, but then thinking about, you know, those knowledge exchange opportunities and moments as well, mm-hmm. as bringing those ideas to Cayman, and how do we apply them with a Cayman lens, you know, not just an international lens of let me take what I see there and just like smack it in Cayman, but you know, what are the ways that can be implemented in a way that it respects who we are?
Yeah, it's this idea of think global, act local,
yes.
right? And it's not about, you know, copy pasting, oh, I saw this great exhibition, so let me go and recreate that mm-hmm. in Cayman. It's about, you know, gathering this inspiration and ideas and connections, and then, like you said, putting them in context here and putting our own Cayman flair on them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to hopefully borrowing some of your books.
Absolutely.
And seeing where your research takes you next. So, Carrie Ann, thank you so much for coming and joining us on Artbeat today. It was great to have you in studio.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a great conversation. And anytime that you want to have this conversation again, just hit me up.
I think I will take you up on that offer very soon, because there's so much more to talk about. So yeah. We'll be back with more Artbeat after the break.
Looking for a unique gift? The National Gallery's gift shop has a wide variety of locally made jewelry and fine crafts, art prints, books, kids' items, and more. Express your creativity through our inspired selection of fine goods and one-of-a-kind pieces. Each purchase from the gift shop helps to support the National Gallery's public programs and free admission. The gift shop is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The National Gallery of the Cayman Islands is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and admission is always free. We are located on the Esterly-Tibbetts Highway just before the Kamana Bay Roundabout, and can also be accessed via Harkvale Drive off Lawrence Boulevard. Visit our website at nationalgallery.org.ky or call us at 345-945-8111 to learn more.
As part of our art and wellness program, and in partnership with the Alex Panton Foundation's Youth Ambassadors Program, the National Gallery hosts free art drop-ins for teenagers aged 14 to 18. Join us on the final Saturday of each month from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Take part in collaborative art projects, socialize with peers, or enjoy mindful creative time in a safe space. For more information, contact us at program@nationalgallery.org.ky or call 345-945-8111. School and community youth groups receive free guided tours of the National Gallery. Our education team works with you to design curricular tours that supplement your classroom syllabus. Contact us at program@nationalgallery.org.ky or call us at 345-945-8111 to book your tour today. All the Coals We Left in the Fire, a mid-career solo exhibition of work by Nasaria Sakou-Shalette, is on view at the National Gallery until October 7th. Shalette's work offers a deep and multi-layered consideration of Caymanian history, including those aspects of our shared experience that have often been overlooked or even buried. Admission to All the Coals We Left in the Fire is free, Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Donations appreciated. This exhibition is kindly sponsored by Butterfield.
Welcome back to Artbeat with the National Gallery of the Cayman Islands. Next up is an interview with Davin Ebanks, recorded in 2021, exploring his overall art practice and the piece Ground Basket Pair, which was first locally exhibited in 2021's second Cayman Islands biennial, Reimagined Futures. Over to William and Davin.
So much, if not all of your work, touches on questions of identity and the sense of connection you feel to your homeland here in Cayman. Many of the works from that older series that I referenced, the Blue Meridian series, make actual references in their titles to fixed coordinates of latitude and longitude that correlate to locations of personal significance to you and generations of your family. So can you put that work kind of in context with the pieces you're making today and sort of how it fits into this broader practice that you've developed over the past several years?
Well, I mean, it took me quite a few years after art school to sort of try to find my work, voice, whatever you want to call it. I think because I chose glass as a medium, and it has this long history of process and technique. In fact, a lot of the work kind of comes out of contemporary glass artists. A lot of the work of contemporary glass artists comes out of the processes. I was just making other people's work for, I don't know, you know, 5-6 years before grad school. And I kind of had to sort of sweat out that Venetian kind of practice. I always knew I needed to make my work. You know, I remember reading somewhere that a writer writes about what they know, and I always had that feeling, but I didn't know what it was because I sort of kept being pulled in other directions to make work that was sort of very glassy. But I look back now at that work as sort of being training for process, like technique, so I could have the toolbox to kind of make whatever I wanted. And I think once I got that toolbox, then I could start to make work that was my work. But it took a long time. And so now when I teach, you know, you reference my teaching practice, I try to see if we can shortcut that somehow. I don't think it's the best way to take a long route around. I don't think you need to go through the glass practice to get to making your work. It just so happened to have been my path. But when I discovered my work, it did revolve around this sense of identity. And being a Caribbean person, of, you know, sort of a mixed race background, that's a weird identity anyway. First off, we're mid-Atlantic, so we're between sort of Europe and, you know, colonial powers and the New World. So you're already sort of stuck in the middle of, you know, nowhere, kind of, as Cayman was anyway. And I felt that my artistic sensibilities were sort of stuck in that same sort of place, you know, having this tradition of material and process from, you know, from Italy, from Europe, and that stretches back to the time of Christ, like 2,000 years of glass blowing. Having that as the thing that I'm drawing on, but also having no connection to that past at all, you know, then how do I take this material, and that I love, clearly love, and want to make something with it that spoke to me, and I hope to other people from here. So I think a long way to answer your question is, you know, the broader part of my practice is trying to be true to where I'm from, and that sense of being truly, I feel both itinerant and sort of definitely, you know, one of the diaspora. I can't make my work where I live, but my work is about where I live. And I don't know if there's anything sort of more Caribbean than that, really. So the new work was kind of came out of a place of being shut, locked down in the States during the pandemic. And it was the time of the Black Lives Matter riots. And, you know, watching that on TV and social media and doing more research than I had before, I sort of thought, you know, I'm, you know, mixed race. I understand the issues that are faced by, you know, my African-American brothers and sisters. The American government considers me African-American somehow. Actually, I know it precisely helps because of an old, outdated law called the one-drop law. We've got one drop of African blood in you, then you were African-American, which was specifically designed to keep people from owning property, from inheriting property from their slave masters. We didn't have any such law in the Caribbean, by the way, which is one reason why brown and black people can own property here. They did inherit it from their colonial masters at certain points. So I was doing all this research and sort of realized I have to make work that acknowledges this past. I grew up with wild cotton growing in my backyard. There was only one reason I was here and only one people who grew it and farmed it. So I started sort of thinking about not just work, like my older work, the Lemurian series, which is about sort of being Caymanian and living here and growing up on the water with my grandfather and listening to these sort of seafaring maritime heritage stories and living that life. But then going back even sort of further and trying to make a work that was about my own story in a very authentic way that didn't borrow from that story in North America, because it's not the same. It's part of it, but we were here first and our experience is different. So how can I make work that speaks to that, the kind of collective experience of the African diaspora? In a way that meant anything to me that was, you know, sort of real and authentic.
And, as you said, your early education or perhaps the subtext of your early education was finding your voice. And that's something that every artist, musician, writer struggles with and strives for. And for me, what you've achieved in this new body of work is a more authentic voice. It's also one that is more reflective of the way the Caribbean looks today, the way culture is diasporic, is transnational, is transcultural. And perhaps that's partly the experience of living in the States and seeing these echoes, these similarities, and these differences with, say, the Black American experience, the Caribbean experience. And somehow going back to earlier history, as you do with your ground basket pair, where you're looking at these sort of iconic symbols of Comanche culture, the ground basket, this humble utilitarian object that for so many years was the way people carried produce to and fro and, you know, bore this burden on their back, either many, you know, hundreds of years ago, when we had slavery here and into well into the 20th century. So for me, this is almost a new project, a 21st century kind of meditation on what it means. Maybe I'm projecting, but you know, for you, you can speak to this, but what it means to be Davin Ebanks in 2021.
I think for a while, I was looking for a way to push the work, in a different direction. And it's easy to, especially in glass, it's easy to get caught up in process and technique. And so for a long time, a lot of my newer work was, which, you know, that Blue Meridian series for me still isn't done. I still have more work to make in that series. But a lot of it is tweaks on technique and tweaks on color and tweaks on scale. It might not necessarily be a new message, really, you know? And so I haven't let go of that, but also at the same time, I have been for a while very aware that, you know, there needs to be some new sort of influx of some sort of energy into the work. And sort of being locked down and sort of stuck with your thoughts for like 3 months, I wasn't allowed back into our studio. I mean, we were completely, even just to go get our papers to be able to teach remotely, we had to have like security escort us, which is crazy. But so, you know, that forced moment of pause, because it's easy to continuously move, go into the studio every day and do something. But I think then to have that, well, one, I got lucky in that I had a solo show coming up. So I had something to work towards. That's huge. You know, sort of if I was to give advice to any, you know, young artist, it would be make sure you've got something coming up, you know, cause you kind of need that pressure. Cause for me, I'll never finish work if I don't have that. I will just keep working on the same thing until, you know, what I need is a studio manager that can come and take it from me, but it's done. Just let it go. It's done and put it out there because I'll just keep messing with it. But if I have that compressed deadline, not that I'm waiting the last minute or anything, but it gives me that kind of focus. I need to do this. And so the work for that show that you referenced at the Sculpture Center that ended up, some of which ended up here, went through lots of iterations, many of which I didn't feel were authentic. Mm-hmm. And then they were borrowing too much from that other story. That isn't, it's a continuation of the story of the Caribbean, you know, person, but it's not the same. So that was the tough part. It's really easy to make work as civil rights and black power, but that's not my experience here. Mm-hmm. So how do I make work that acknowledges some of that history, but it's authentic to where I'm from and who I am and what I know to, or what I'm learning about my past.
And it seems from your other work that's in the biennial, Passages Triptych, which is a very complex work, part of your practice is study, is you've read Caribbean literature, you've kind of revisited or gone back to this history, and you've used it as inspiration to create new stories and new works. So we can't see that work. It's on display in the Lower Exhibition Hall, but we'll have some images for people to see. Can you talk about the kind of iconography of that piece? I mean, it's very striking. You're using color, and when I was thinking about your work, someone who's not expert in glass sculpting, we can maybe go into some of the minutiae of the process of how you make these objects. But color is normally the preserve, perhaps, of painters more traditionally, but color features so strongly in your work. But also some of the symbolism, these materials that you're alluding to, it's all glass, right? But it has this almost invitation to touch, this tactile quality. Mm-hmm. And of course, some of the objects, the plantain, the banana, these rife with kind of connotations. Could you talk about that piece?
Sure. So the Passages piece came out of being sort of inundated with images of the, you know, sort of the iconic image of the slave ship with bodies sort of stacked in it. And that's sort of everywhere. And of course, you know, during the first part of the pandemic, Black Lives Matter, there was all these sort of amplified melanated voices, hashtag stuff on social media. And I'm, you know, of course, familiar with that image. And it just got my mind sort of thinking, and this is none of art is sort of like a formula where it's, you know, sort of A plus B equals C. You know, it's more like A plus B equals yellow or something, right? It's like good creativity is a quantum leap to somewhere else that isn't where you sort of started, but you still have to do that sort of groundwork, right? So I'm thinking about these things and at the same time imagining or remembering sort of being in a boat with my grandfather, sort of maybe laying on the bottom of the boat, looking up at this sort of framed sky of this like endless kind of blue. And imagining sort of my, what a voice like that from somewhere being moved as a human being, as a commodity, shoved into a space and moved to another place, that journey. And I felt that the journey more than the sort of destination or the results of that destination was kind of more of the Caribbean, at least for Cayman, that story. And so those pieces sort of came out of that. To me, it's a deconstruction of a voyage. You know, you have the bodies packed into a tight space. And, you know, if you've ever let a plantain get totally ripe to fry, it's this like insanely textured, almost fleshy thing, you know. And of course, it's in that banana shape, and there's just so many things there, and it turns this weird, like, deep, rich black, and has those flecks of gold still left on it. And I couldn't, you know, not be drawn to that texture and wonder, could I capture that and contrast that? And at the same time, thinking about the cotton that I referenced earlier, so I just bought some cotton online. You can buy raw cotton. It just comes in a bag of cotton. There's no way you can let cotton grow wild here, but I was in a pandemic and came out and shut down. You can't really like, hey, can you mail me some stuff from Cayman? No, okay. And figured out a way to make molds of cotton, and that to me became the clouds. And then the blue, just the blue glass is either water or sky. And I just thought to myself how referential to an arched Gothic church window that boat image is. And what if I made that more direct? Because there is a massive connection between, you know, sort of religion and slavery and that, for lack of a better word, white supremacy connection to religion. My dad's a preacher, not anything against that, but because of that, sort of reflecting on those connections. So to me, that work was like the closest I could get to using some of that iconography in a way that felt like I wasn't trying to tell anybody what to think about this. You know, if you know some of that history, if you know what that image is, anybody who does know that image, I have a colleague who's an African art historian, and that's the first thing he thought of. He was like, you know, this is these black bodies jammed into this space. And I was like, well, okay, yeah, good. That's exactly what it was to me. I don't expect everybody to get that. I like it when my work can be multiple things at one time. It's a window, it's a boat, it's a ship or whatever. I don't want it to be any one thing, because then I think it's sort of, it's too on the nose and it's too telling, rather than sort of presenting a thing and then letting people bring to it what they, well, their stories, their thoughts on that. And they're not going to be far off of what my intention was, but I think if I'm too heavy-handed, then my intention overrides everything, and then you sort of see it and you go, okay, I get it, and walk away, you know. And I don't think that good art does that. I'm not saying that's good art, by the way, just to be clear. But I'm striving to make good art, and I think good art keeps you interested in asking questions.
For me, this work sort of oscillates between the material and the immaterial, because I think about memory, and we talked about, tried to imagine what it would have been like on these slave ships, but this sort of the fragmentary quality of memory, looking through a porthole, you know, if you had the luxury of being able to see outside and just getting these snippets, these impressions of blue, or a small slice of sky, you know, looking up and that sense of being transported elsewhere, the rocking motion of the boat. So, you know, sculpture has this embodiment in a material form, but there's all these other qualities that I think your work somehow miraculously makes us feel. You know, the sense of space, of these intangible qualities.